Sahanavavatu, sahanau bhunaktu, sahaviryam karavavahai, tejasvi navadhitamastuma vidvishavahai. Om shanti shanti shantihi. Om jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda, Sri Advaita Gadadhara Srivasadi Gaura Bhaktavinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Right. So now we have Duryodhana, you know, determined to, you know, fast until death. And Karna, Dushasana, and Shakuni have come and made their points, tried to convince him otherwise. But he's very determined, you know, in his position. And so that leaves us at this point. Still, Duryodhana did not waver in his determination. He spread kusha grass on the ground, took off his royal garments and put on rags, purified himself by touching water, and sat down in a yogic posture. With a desire to attain heaven, began to observe the praya vow of fasting until death. He stopped speaking and ceased all other external activities. Half closed his eyes, soon he was meditating. Right, so there's a process that you're just transferring yourself like that. That's the whole point. So it's not that you're just dying, but you're actually absorbed somewhere else. That's why when you leave this, you go there. In the nether regions, and it's a recommended process. If there's nothing else, then you can do this, you know, for whatever reason. But you can't, cut off your head and some things like that. That's not bona fide. In the nether regions, the Danavas and Daityas had become aware of Duryodhana's resolve. Those celestial beings who had been defeated in a war with the gods were depending on Duryodhana to oppose the gods, God's purpose on earth. Many of the demons had even incarnated upon the earth as kings and warriors with the hope of overthrowing the pious kings who made sacrifices to the gods. Fearing that their party would not succeed without Duryodhana, the celestial demons began a fire sacrifice. They employed brahmanas to chant mantras that had the power to summon to their presence a man from any other planet. As the brahmins offered ghee into the fire while reciting hymns from the Atharva Veda and the Upanishads, a strange-looking effulgent goddess arose from the fire and asked, "What shall I do?" "Please," the demons commanded her, "bring Duryodhana, the son of Dhritarashtra, here. He is engaged in a vow of fasting." "So be it," she said, and vanished. She went immediately to the place where Duryodhana sat. Unseen, she took him in his subtle body and brought him before the demons in the nether region. Right, so his gross body will be there, but they brought his subtle body and him along with it. So somehow the body just stays there like that. You know, it's some arrangement, all these mantras. As if in a dream, Duryodhana found himself standing in an assembly of Danavas. Their leaders, his eyes wide with delight, said, "O King of Kings, O perpetrator of the Bharata race, you are always surrounded by heroes and illustrious men. Why then have you undertaken such a rash vow? Suicide always leads to hell. One who kills himself is reviled on earth, and he attains no auspicious destination. Intelligent men like you never engage in acts that go against their best interest. O King, give up your resolve to die. Such a resolve is destructive to morality, profit, happiness, fame, prowess, and energy." Right, so you see these things, morality, profit, happiness, fame, it's again, niti. It's just on that platform. So it's against that platform. It means suicide in general, yes, it's always against. It's never going to give you a good position. You'll end up as a ghost. But in this, it's that your resolve to attain to a higher position. But then he'll go and become a demigod. But the demons, they want him, you know, to be working with, for them. They're against the demigods. "If you commit suicide, you will enhance your enemy's joy. Listen now as we tell you the truth of your position, your celestial origins, and your power. Then you may decide what you wish to do." Right? Because he just, you know, he's son of Dhritarashtra, and he's got cousins, and like this and like that. So they're saying, "We're going to tell you what your actual background is." The Danava then described how Duryodhana had been born as a result of the demon's austerities. They had obtained him as a boon from Shiva. His body was made of thunder and was virtually invincible. Powerful Danavas had incarnated on earth as kings and were supporting him. United in battle, he would doubtlessly destroy his enemies. right? Because like even though is Karna, he's Narakasura in his previous life, and so that was the big battle where Krishna went, you know, and destroyed Bhaumasura's, you know, whole scene and everything like that. And so this is so like that. So there's more demons that have all come. At the time of the battle, other great demons would possess the hearts of Bhishma, Drona, Kripa, and others. Thus the Kuru chiefs would cast aside restraint and compassion and kill anyone who opposed them, even their brothers, sons, friends, fathers, disciples, even children and old men. Like you see, as they all get together and kill Abhimanyu. Because normally they wouldn't do such a thing, but because the demons had taken up their position. Blinded by ignorance and wrath, they would show no mercy and would slay hundreds of thousands on the battlefield. Right? Because who are they slaying? The ones that are supporting the Pandavas. And the Pandavas, they're coming from the demigods. So we see the battle at Kurukshetra is technically a war between the demigods and the demons. Just that they're using the human platform as the medium instead of something else. As Duryodhana listened in amazement, the Dhanava continued, "O hero, you should not fear Arjuna. We have already decided how he will die. The soul of the powerful Naraka, who Vishnu himself slew, has taken birth as Karna. Remembering his former enmity, he will kill both Krishna and Arjuna." Right? So being demons, they think this is possible. That, you know, that means the demons always think they can kill Krishna. They don't understand that's not possible. Knowing this, the wielder of the thunder, Indra, will try to divest Karna of his natural armor and earrings, both of which render him invincible. We have therefore also arranged that hundreds of thousands of mighty Daitya warriors, now present on earth in the form of the Samsaptikas, will fight Arjuna. Right? So that's also on that day when after they killed Abhimanyu, right? Because he's also the son of the moon god. Then you can see it's because of that the demoniac influence. Then he will make a determination that he'll kill Jayadratha, you know, that day, otherwise he'll die. And so then he'll be gotten rid of because the Samsaptikas will come. And they're all these demons. I think there's 25,000 of them. You know, so these are their Kshatriyas, and then they'll have all their, you know, all their soldiers and everything with them. And so they'll engage him in a fight. So that the idea was he won't finish in the day, and therefore then he will die. If Karna does not slay Arjuna, these warriors will. Therefore, do not grieve. You will rule the earth without a rival. Go back and give up your vow. You are our refuge, and we are here to assist you in every way. Right? Because the demons, because they've been defeated by the demigods, they're not getting that control that they want. So then they take birth on the earth and in positions as kings. Even it's mentioned even as very strong animals that they'll lead the herd. You know, like the biggest elephant or the biggest, you know, tiger or like this, so that they're in charge. They just have to be in charge. They have to be in control. That's very important for them. Like you see Duryodhana, as far as facility, position, enjoyment, he has everything, but no, he has to control beyond that. So the same, the demons, that's their mentality. The Dhanavas and Daityas came forward and embraced Duryodhana. They all spoke encouragingly and cheered his mind. Finally, they said, "Go and attain victory." Then they commanded the goddess to return him to his body. After being returned to his seat on the kusa grass, Duryodhana opened his eyes. He recalled his meeting with the Daityas as if it had been a dream. The prince was not certain if it had actually occurred, but it had changed his mind. In any case, whatever it was. Whether or not he had met the celestial beings was unimportant. He took their predictions seriously. Surely their words would come to pass and he would defeat the Pandavas. Karna and the Samsaptikas would kill Arjuna, and thousands of other Kshatriyas would assist him in the war to come. Right? Because all these demons have taken birth as kings, they'll all come and they'll all support. While Duryodhana sat ruminating on the Dhanava's words, Karna came before him. Duryodhana immediately decided not to tell anyone what had happened. Seeing that he had stopped his meditation, Karna said, "It is good to see that you have restored to your senses. A dead man can never conquer his enemies. This is not the time to grieve. Why do you wish to die so ignominiously? O hero, rise up and kill your foes. Go out and attain victory and immortal fame. I swear that when the Pandavas emerge from exile. I will conquer them and bring them under your subjugation. To the delight of his brothers incarnate, Duryodhan replied, so be it. He stood up, still reflecting on the dawn of his speech. He then took his place at the head of his army and started back to Hastinapur, his mind set upon amassing his army for war. Right? So he didn't go to the Pandavas and say thank you or this or that. He just went back, got his thing, and just left. And that. And now he's, you know, focused on setting up the, you know, his army and all that, because he knows very soon they'll be back. Because somehow or another, he's, yeah, of course, if they don't, then it'll be another 12 years. But at some point, you have to get ready. Chapter 32, Sage Durvasa. When Bhishma heard of the events at Dvaitavan, he decided to speak to Duryodhana. Finding the prince seated with Shakuni in his majestic palace, Bhishma approached him and said, O child, I have repeatedly requested you not to maintain enmity with the Pandavas. You were advised not to go to the forest, but still you went. Now you have clearly seen the Pandavas' prowess and also that of Karna. Right? So he's pointing out a practical. Gandharvas, Karna. Gandharvas, Arjuna, like that. Karna is defeated along with everybody else. Arjuna is victorious on his own. So you've seen like that. Of course, you know, they have their way of looking at it. So it always, you know, it was just by chance, you know, or something like that. You know, Karna was distracted because he was out there on the battlefield and he forgot if he, you know, how I say, you know, put food out for the cat or something, or did he leave the gas on in the kitchen? So he was distracted, and that's why they won. Something stupid. In your presence, he fled the battlefield. It was then left to the Pandavas to rescue you, O king. In martial skills, heroism, or morality, Karna is not even a fourth of any one of Pandu's sons. Like, that's any one, let alone Arjuna. Like that. Make peace with the brothers for your good and for the good of our race. Right? So they'll be back, and so then make peace. They did it before, and things went well. And then they came up with this foolish match, and so he's good. Bhishma knew that most of Duryodhana's hopes of defeating the Pandavas rested on Karna. Ever since Karna had appeared at the martial arts demonstration and challenged Arjuna, Duryodhana had seen him as the only way to conquer Arjuna. Now it should be obvious that Karna was no match for Arjuna, right? So he came in, showed whatever Arjuna did, Karna showed the same things. But as it's pointed out here, because of he has so many martial arts skills, but now Arjuna's has increased. Karna's, as we know, are the same. And the heroism and morality are much greater. So Duryodhana thought, okay, here's someone who is inimical to the Pandavas, is willing to show his prowess and be loyal to him. So he put all his hopes on him. But now Bhishma is pointing out, but now you just saw he's not as good as, you're pinning all your hopes on him, and he doesn't have that prowess that you can put all that weight on his shoulders. Bhishma looked hopefully at the prince, right? Maybe he'll understand. But Duryodhana, remembering the Donava's words, laughed. What did this old man know? He didn't know what would happen. The Pandavas were in for a surprise. Bhishma himself would be part of that surprise when the demons took hold of him. So he's thinking, no, is there, but then the demons will come and that, in which they will. But at the same time, as you say, is that they're still defeated. Because the point is you have the demons on one side, the demigods on the other, but then where's Krishna? Right? So Krishna is the supreme controller. So Krishna's with Arjuna, so Arjuna's going to win. Duryodhana did not bother to reply, right? Because he's just going back to his old self. It's just he knows, no one else knows. He's not about to tell anybody else, so. He stood up suddenly and walked out of the room. Bhishma could only shake his head sadly. He was not surprised to see Duryodhana's arrogance. It now seemed that the Kuru's destruction was imminent. The old warrior returned slowly and sadly to his own chambers, right? Because he'll be fighting on Duryodhana's side. You know, that's going to happen. But he's pointing out, as you've seen the prowess. After he left, Bhishma, Duryodhana was joined by Karna, Shakuni, and Dushasana. The prince looked around at his counselors and asked, what remains to be done? How can I secure my good fortune? Let us fix on some plan. Right? That's what Krishna is pointing out in the Gita, is that when the demigods, when things go difficult, they turn to the Supreme Lord. The demons, when things go difficult, they just make a new plan. Okay, that plan didn't work, we have another plan. So in that way, they're just gone making newer and newer plans, and each one failing. Duryodhana then told him that what Bhishma had said, and Karna became uncomfortable. The cruel grandfather was always berating him. He did not seem to like him, because he was so arrogant. It means, even if he was, he could have come into the assembly, bowed to Dronacharya, said, "I've seen all these things, I can also show, if you'll allow me, I show these prowess, and I'll also, support the gurus and all this and that," then it would have been a different thing. But he came in arrogant, didn't care for the gurus, just showed everything as if, yeah, what is all this, I can do all that. So his attitude was not good. So that's why Bhishma doesn't like him from that angle. Just like why the Pandavas have a problem with him. It's because of his attitude. Not that he's not a good warrior or, has a proper chivalrous mood and all that, like a Kshatriya should and that. But his attitude, he doesn't have that proper respect for the elders that he should. So therefore, how far can it go? It started with his own guru, with Parasaram. He didn't have the proper respect. Karna felt he was as much a well-wisher of the Kurus as was Bhishma himself. Maybe it was time to prove Bhishma's assessment of him wrong. Wringing his hands, he said, "O mighty king, Bhishma blames us and praises the Pandavas. It is clear that he favors them over you. Because he bears you ill will, he abuses me too. I cannot bear to hear his words any longer. Give me an army, and I shall single-handedly conquer the world for the Kauravas, just as the Pandavas did before the Rajasuya sacrifice. Let the wicked-minded wretch of the Kurus, the senile Bhishma, see it and regret how he's treated me. Simply command me, and I shall leave at once." Right, so he also has this mood, is simply pride, just as Duryodhana and all that. So that's that pride comes from ego. Ego comes from ignorance. So we see it's always it's not a godly quality, that this false ego in that. So he's very well situated. Though you see in other ways, he may be very charitable and deal very nicely and all that. He's here, can be very loyal and very dedicated. So these are all good qualities, but they're all in the context of his pride. And so because of that, it'll be weak. It won't have the same position, same potency. Duryodhana slapped his friend on the back in delight. "I am blessed because you have favored me," right? Because they think Bhishma is not favoring. But he is, he's supporting. They're not seeing, no, he's speaking from wisdom. Because he's speaking Dharma. And he's also being practical. But they just discuss Niti, so they can't see, oh, he's not supporting us. "Oh, hero, what more could I want than to see one such as you interested in my welfare? Surely my life has borne fruit today. Go out, dear friend, and vanquish my foes. May good come to you. Just ask, and I shall do whatever I can to help." Karna at once began to make arrangements for his expedition. Duryodhana amassed a vast army with a year's supplies. Right, because he go out for the... So in other words, he goes out, then he conquers all these kings, then they all have to fight for him anyway. Like this. And gets them all on their side. So in other words, those who support Duryodhana, ones who don't will come out and fight, and Karna will defeat them, because he is good. But then that means now they have to accept the reign of Duryodhana. So then that means in this way, he will amass himself a greater army. So then he's pointing out, see, I've done this, Bhishma, what did you do? That kind of thing. But the point is Bhishma didn't have to. Pandu did it before, then Yudhishthir did it, with Arjuna and his brothers. So what's the need now? Because the point is they're, if they don't go out and the Pandavas come back and they all work together, they're already in that position. So this is artificially going out and just disturbing the other kingdoms, because there's no necessity for it like that. It's only necessity for him if he wants to increase his own army for the battle. That is just for himself. It's not for the benefit of his citizens, benefit for all the citizens of the world, right? Because he claims he's the emperor of the world, but he's not doing it for the benefit of the world. He's doing it simply for his own singular, selfish position. No one else will get benefit. Like that. Yes, but what to do? But that's his position. Yeah. So now we'll see what happens next. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki Jai.